This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's corporate cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Special thanks to our sponsors of the Midlife Mail podcast, Human Improvement, clean, easy to digest protein, the official exclusive protein powder of the Midlife Mail. Head over to buyhi, that's buyhi.co. You're going to save 15%. Use the promo code MidlifeMail at checkout. That is Human Improvement, 22 grams of organic protein, 5 grams of healthy fiber, 0 grams of added sugar, guaranteed great taste, vanilla or chocolate. This is protein powder that actually makes you feel better. Greg Scheinman here for another week and another episode of the Midlife Mail podcast. Thank you so much for joining me this week and every week to keep the Midlife Mail movement growing. The mission here, help men maximize middle age. Each week, we see greater listeners. We see more subscribers to the newsletter. Your emails, your comments, your shares, all of it means the world to me. So thank you so much. I am grateful. We've changed the mission. We've changed the Everest. Actually, the mission has stayed the same. Help men maximize middle age. The Everest has changed. Let's help 1 million men maximize middle age. Let's help them live better, happier, healthier, wealthier, and have more fun. And you know what? It doesn't matter what age or stage you're at right now. I know some really old 30-year-olds. I know some really young 60-year-olds. Well, it doesn't matter what age or stage you're at. What matters is that today is the day that you can start. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, today is the day that you can start to transform from mediocre to maximized. And I don't care how successful you are in life. We all feel mediocre at times. We all feel like there's something else we could be doing. We're striving for fulfillment, for authenticity, for intention, for purpose. And constantly and consistently working on personal growth and personal transformation is imperative. And it's guys like Dr. Jason Auerbach who inspire me, who motivate me. I've known Jay since we were teenagers. What's interesting after not speaking for 30 years is you always wonder what guys are going to grow up to become. What kind of men are they going to be? And here we are reconnecting in midlife. And he is the founder of Riverside Oral Surgery. They're celebrating their 15-year anniversary. He's an oral and maxillofacial surgeon. Not only can I not do it, I can barely even say it. Super impressive guy. He's been dedicated to providing the optimal patient experience through clinical excellence, compassionate care, and close attention to every detail since he opened Riverside Oral Surgery in 2007. The list of honors bestowed on him is too long to mention and go into detail on every one of them. But I am going to point out that he is also the guy that launched Bloody Tooth Guy, on Instagram, and with 184,000 followers, he is out there posting about what he does in people's mouths. And he started this with zero followers, a couple of surgical instruments, and endless possibilities. So check that out too. Out of all the accolades and everything, what really got to me was, wait a minute, your bloody tooth guy? And he was cool enough to send me a bloody tooth guy hoodie and hat so I can wear it all over the place. He has been featured in Yahoo Finance, MarketWatch. He's a regular contributor to Incisal Edge magazine. He has guested on numerous podcasts, webinars, and was recently named Course Karma's Educator of the Year. And I'm just proud of him. I'm happy for all of his success. And it was cool to catch up with an old friend doing great things and truly maximizing middle age. So let's get after it. Dr. Jason Auerbach, founder, Riverside Oral Surgery, on the Midlife Male podcast. You know, this opportunity to help men and maximize middle age has turned into this, you know, this thing. And it's a lot of fun. It's harder than I've ever worked. But it's a really different kind of hard work. And and I'm enjoying it. So now the question is, like, where do we go?
I mean, you're well suited to it. You're killing it. I mean, I've watched some of your stuff, and I mean, you're clearly real. You've always been real comfortable talking to people and on stage. Obviously, you look good. So, I mean, it's the whole thing is again really well suited to you. And I hope you can kill it on this thing. It's really the right time, right? The content creation and the culture that we're in right now, people always looking for this. And it's kind of I'm sure you know this, it's a different space, right? It's a lot of self-help stuff is directed toward women. And I think there's becoming a little bit more awareness of men kind of needing to take care of themselves, obviously physically, but psychologically as well. So I think that, I think it's a really good concept. I mean, from what I see, you know.
I appreciate it. Look, it's where I am. Let's put it that way. It's right where I am. So the conversations can be just real and authentic in what they are. Right. You know, and as you said, let guys take away from the content and the communication and the shared experiences. Let them take away from it, you know, what they want, what hopefully, you know, helps them. And this opportunity to share other stories like your own and bring different guys in that are doing all different kinds of things. You know, just helps show, you know, what's really possible and what's probable if you put the work in and you do things. And at the same time, like, we don't have it fucking figured out. You know, we're still figuring it out and making up a lot of shit as we go along, you know. And sure, people say things like, oh, but you know, you look confident up there, you got this, and you're like, look, peel it all back, like, no, like, it's hard and it's stressful and tons of places that you look comfortable you totally feel uncomfortable. Like, you know,
well said,
you know. So what's it been, like a good 30-ish years, you know, give or take? Like,
something
maybe
like that.
Bump into each other in Florida like once a while back.
Yeah.
But what I find astounding, like, I just find this stuff fascinating, you know, like what people become.
Right.
You know, like we interact, like we've known each other since we were kids. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, like, okay, and here you are moguling, you know, right. You know, with practices and business. And then we'll get into all of this stuff. I just want to like flow through like all of it. Like, let me even ask you, like, did you even, is this what you wanted to do? Like when we were kids, like, were you going to be like a dentist or a surgeon?
Never. I mean, honestly, for me, I was always entrepreneurial. I was always involved in, I always understood people and kind of promotions and things like that. I've always been someone who's been driven to be successful or whatever that means, financially so. But I never really had, I didn't have much guidance. My father was not very, I mean, he did fine-ish. But I was surrounded by a lot of guys who were very successful. And it was something that was, you know, I carried almost like, I always say to my younger guys who work for me, like, you need to have almost some sort of a chip on your shoulder or a manufactured chip on your shoulder in order to really hit crazy, crazy heights. If you're too comfortable, you get complacent, you're content. I used to confuse contentment and complacency a lot. But I think you can be content and be in a good place. Whereas I think that if you're too content, sometimes you can become complacent. And so again, I was surrounded by people, you know, where we grew up, where I grew up, very successful people around me. But I looked at that with a little bit of envy and how could I achieve this? And so I think that I want to believe that I would have figured out a way in whatever kind of mode I was in to become more successful. I had no clue I was going to go into healthcare, no clue dentistry, no clue oral surgery. Even when I was in dentistry, I found oral surgery kind of like by chance. Once I was in oral surgery, I had a really crazy thing happen to me. I got stuck by an HIV positive needle. This was in 1999. Bugged the shit out of me. It put me into like very, very deep kind of depression time. I was with my then girlfriend, who's now my wife. And you know, I was like, she's a great girl, beautiful, comes from a good family, kind, everything all positive. And she's going to stick by me through that difficult time. And I was like, you know, get away from me. I thought I was going to die of AIDS. I had no clue what was going to happen. Thank God, no HIV, you know, the whole thing, never converted. Thankfully, it's all very low risk, but your mind plays crazy tricks on you. Then I thought about going to business school, and I was going to go get my MBA. I was going to go to Columbia. And then the world kind of changed. This was like 2007, 2000. No, that's a lie. 2007. It was 1999 or 2000 or whatever it was, like tech bubble or whatever. I was like, fuck that. I'm not going to go get my MBA. I'm going to be an oral surgeon. So again, a lot of my like life trajectory has been almost by chance, seemingly. And a lot of my success has come off of heels of like perceived failures. I thought I didn't get something. I thought I missed out on an opportunity or didn't get something that I thought I wanted that turned into like a much better opportunity.
You know, someone just is so interesting. And you know, the guys, for the people that are out there listening, again, like Jay and I grew up, you know, right near each other. We grew up on, I mean, I looked at things in a very similar way. It's like, we didn't know where to go but down, like in a lot of ways. Like shit, like this is going to be hard. Like also like to keep this up. And the more I learned about what it takes to, you know, keep it up, you know, I mean, and my family too was not the most successful by any stretch compared to like who we were around, right. You know, yeah, like the houses we were seeing, the cars. I mean, there was a lot of like haves, not a lot of have nots at all. And then there, even within the haves, there was just like these layers. Like my family in a way was like just trying to keep up, you know,
right.
Like, yep, we're in the zip code. Okay. But we're not on the water, you know, we got the car. Okay. But not five of them, you know, like it's harder to make these payments to do. And you saw just, you were surrounded by so much. And like, it just bothered me early, you know, like you talk about like that chip on your shoulder a little bit, right. Like, and I don't know, like you took it as the chip on your shoulder to be successful and go out and go in a way, go after it. Like, I think my chip on my shoulder was almost the opposite. Like, I don't know if I want this, you know, like
right.
This all comes at a cost, you know? Stress, you know, keeping up with the Joneses, the posing, the stuff, you know, like I didn't never really felt real, you know, right. There. And then right. When my dad passed away, it was like, okay, this completely redefined success. That was like, or what success looks like or should look like, because like, okay, like now this was like a life or death thing. It wasn't just a financial thing. It was like, what's really important? And I just bugged out, you know, like around all of that. And it's not that I don't like money. Like I like money, Right. and success. It was just this nature of, I guess, like the competitive aspect of it. Like my chip came on the opposite way, more of a, I'll create a life, you know, that I want to create. That's not defined by any, by this peninsula, you know, right, on the North Shore. So, but don't hate me if you're at home and you're my friends, like you're still my friends and everything, but it's like, it was a weird dynamic. Right. But when you did get into dentistry and then ultimately like oral surgery, this is a stretch for me to put this together. Like I could say I want to go be like an oral surgeon or something, like, but I don't like blood. I don't like cutting into it. Like, how did you even like also figure out that like you could do that? Like you got to go a pretty good way down the path, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, so I went to undergrad at Syracuse and I met a guy who's still a very, very close friend of mine, whose father was an orthodontist. And again, I did not have like a very strong, my dad traveled a lot for business. He was actually kind of in a position where he had to. So he wasn't really, I really did not have the guidance, professional guidance that a lot of people in our world had. And so this guy, I became a very close friend and very influential in my life. And just in terms of everything, like what music I listen to for the most part now, to my profession, to just a number of different things. His dad was an orthodontist. He told me, he's like, I'm going to go to dental school. I said, all right, sounds pretty good to me. Like my grades were fairly good at the time. I'm good with my hands. I had the aptitude to like do things. I always did things with my hands. And I really did like to work with people. I like the fact that dentistry as a profession was also a business, like that married art and science. And I thought to myself that it was a really kind of a good way to get my creative side out and also my business side out. So I went to dental school perceiving that I was going to be like a cosmetic dentist to the stars in Manhattan. This was my mindset without really knowing. I had no knowledge of what that took, what that meant, but I thought it like I was, again, suited for that. I was a social person. I could meet a lot of people and speak with a lot of people. And I figured networking, although I didn't know that to be called networking, I just thought that was hanging out and talking to people. But I thought, you know, networking was something that I was kind of natural with at, and it would be what I would do. Then I get to dental school and I find that the minutia of dentistry, 1 degree taper here, it's crazy. You're talking about microns, you're talking about millimeters. To me, in ways was a little overblown on the dental side. So I just kind of happened downstairs into the oral surgery clinic, started like hanging out with the guys who were into oral surgery. But oral surgery, so to understand, in order to become an oral maxillofacial surgeon, you have to finish basically at the top of your class in dental school. You have to then match into a residency program that is 4 or 6 years after dental school. I thought like, this is a tremendous commitment in time. And I don't know that I had the fortitude to actually go through something like that process. So turns out that I loved it, that I loved actually doing it. I loved the way it made me feel personally. And I loved the fact that I could help people. So as a third year dental student, when most dental students didn't want to be taking teeth out, they just wanted to focus on like fillings and crowns and endodontics and stuff like that, they would allow me to, or ask me to be like the oral surgeon, almost like the specialty relationship. So I was rolling around the clinics in NYU dental school, just taking teeth out. This is what I thought it was. Thankfully, I had the grades. I did very well in dental school because I partied in undergrad. So I was able to like kind of buckle down it. I got it out of my system in undergrad. And so I killed it. And then I went and I had my residency position in Brooklyn at Kings County Hospital, which was as hardcore as you get. Full scope type of stuff, maxillofacial trauma, head and neck pathology, jaw reconstruction, and of course what most people think of oral surgery as, which is dental alveolar surgery, like wisdom teeth, implants, extractions, bone grafts, stuff like this. So again, I always preach also to my younger guys who work for me that, you know, if you could find a way, and it's put out there a lot. Now, a lot of these things that I think were in my brain have been verbalized by others on social media very well, where it's like, if you could find something that like you have an aptitude for, can make you some money, can help the world, like, and you could find a way to marry those things, then this is an exceptional way of life, right? So I found that in oral surgery. It's a great outlet for me, like I said, creatively. It's a great outlet for me in terms of mechanics with my hands. It's a great outlet for me with people, with business. And of course, it yields for me, it has yielded for me a very, very good life. Marry that with the fact that social media has become something. And then I start this bloody tooth guy thing kind of totally randomly, another example. And it's been like, you know, meteoric. So it's
walk me through that a little bit, because where I've been kind of hanging on everything you're saying is, you know, this, you know, bringing your creative side, you know, like, yeah. Okay, I didn't see that connection for as you're talking, like, okay, oh, dentistry, like creativity. And then it was, okay, cosmetic dentistry, celebrity. Okay, now I see creativity in there. Then it was, you know, okay, I can become an oral surgeon. I can bring my creative side. And then it's, oh, here's social media. I can become like almost right. This like alter cat, like walk me through the creation of Bloody Tooth Guy, which yeah. Is like such an incredible like name. I need the hoodie also, by the way, like, and all this stuff. Like walk me through that moment. You're like, this is, I'm going to go start this thing, you know? I would just love to be like the fly in the wall of that conversation, like even at home. Like, hey, honey, I'm now going to be known as the Bloody Tooth Guy.
Right. So it actually, like many things that have happened in my professional life, it kind of just happened organically. No shit. Sitting where I'm currently sitting right now, thinking about Instagram. I have kids. I have two daughters. I have an 18-year-old daughter and a 15-year-old daughter. And so if you think about when I started, which you may not know, was 2015. They were young, they were pre-teeny kind of kids, and they were getting into Instagram. And I've always been a little bit younger at heart, if you will. So I was kind of interested in the concept. So I went on, I saw Dr. Pimple Popper back in the day. And she was really kind of just getting started. And I thought to myself, like, if there are people out there who are interested in this kind of stuff and are not turned off by it, and she was building a strong audience at the time, then, you know, maybe there'd be people who are interested in seeing the stuff that I do. Not to the same degree. I never thought that it would be, you know, millions and all that kind of stuff. Sorry about the train. But I started Bloody Tooth Guy because I just thought people might want to see some bloody teeth. And actually it was the early days of Instagram. And because it was, all I put up there were still photos of bloody teeth. And as Instagram evolved and video became a thing, and there was more of an artistic side of what was being presented, I was doing things with the bloody teeth, and I was creating videos with the bloody teeth. And initially I was totally anonymous because I wasn't sure about HIPAA. I wasn't sure how my competitors would use it against me. I wasn't really sure about any of that stuff. But I've never been disrespectful to patients or anything like that. If you look at it, it's very, very professional. And it has evolved into a place where young dentists, surgically minded dentists, and specialists around the world come for practical CE, you know, continuing education. So they look at my stuff and they learn techniques and they learn some of the technologies that I'm using and they implement it into their practices. And it's been really a tremendous, tremendous ride for me.
This week's episode of the Midlife Male Podcast is brought to you in part by Kineon, the makers of the Move Plus portable light therapy device that uses LED lights and medical grade laser technology to improve blood flow to injured and inflamed areas. This is great for your shoulder, your bicep, knee pain, any of your injuries. I started testing this out about 90 days ago. It's an incredible device. It takes just 5 minutes a day, about 5 days a week, to put the infrared lights. They have a strap, you wrap it around your knee, your elbow, your shoulder. And at 50 years old, over the past 90 days, I have seen significant improvement in my range of motion, decrease in inflammation. I'm feeling better. I have less pain, faster recovery. And I have been testing and retesting this. And I have come to the conclusion that the Kineon Move Plus flat out works.
It helps to restore damaged blood vessels, encourages cartilage regrowth as somebody who has had three knee surgeries, reducing joint pain and inflammation quickly through whole joint coverage with sniper-like accuracy and cutting-edge dual light enhanced light therapy. It's hugely important to me to be efficient and effective in its application, its delivery, and the results. There's a lot of red light therapy products out there. Most of them do not deliver the right dosage to be as effective as they could be. And that is key to optimal results. The Kineon Move Plus dual light tech delivers the deeper joint penetration and the exact right dosage for fast recovery. It goes right up against your skin. You don't have to worry, am I too close? Am I too far? Where do I stand? How do I do this? It is so simple. I use it pre-workout. Sometimes I use it post-workout. I'll put it on in the car when I'm on the way to the gym. I can work with it on whatever, 5 minutes a day to help alleviate chronic joint pain, inflammation, whatever you are experiencing, knees, elbows, shoulders, necks, the Kineon Move Plus can help you. Check it out, guys. Head over to Kineon, that's kineon.io/midlifemail. You're going to get 10% off with my code midlifemail. Each module is battery powered. They include a rapid recharge device. I use the USB in my computer to charge it up so you can recover anywhere at any time, at home or on the go. Huge believer in the Kineon Move Plus. Check it out. What's the most surprising thing that's come out of it?
The most surprising thing is the widespread reach. Actually, that's not even the most surprising thing. The whole thing is very surprising. I have fans. I have followers all over the world, really heavy in like Middle East, Eastern Europe, South America. I mean, all over the place. The only place where I really don't have a strong following is Asia. And I think it's really a function of the language and hashtagging and what I did when I built it out. But I do have a really strong following all over the world. But the craziest thing for me, dude, is I'll be in like a restaurant in the city, like waiting to use the restroom or whatever. And someone will walk up to me inevitably and be like, bloody tooth guy. Like, and I'm like, yeah, it's like, can we take it? People ask me to take selfies. I mean, you know me, like it's crazy. I'm a dentist, right? So like, yes, I have achieved a certain level of success in dentistry. It's a really, really, really narrow, but deep vertical. If you're a dental student or you're a resident and you see me out, most of them come over to me and ask for a photograph or something like that. And that to me is probably the craziest piece for me. Totally.
That to me would be so wild. By the way, you got trains. Let's talk about midlife. You got trains going on outside your office. I got vacuuming going downstairs right now. I'm texting. I'm like, please stop the vacuuming. I got seven guys painting my kitchen, you know, right now. They've taken over the garage. We've got my Glendy, who's amazing, deciding to vacuum and everything right now. Like, come on, I do this for an hour a day. Like, can I get an hour, you know, there. You mentioned, because I like, you know, you're going deep in all this stuff. And I also, I like the narrow and deep. And I also got to ask you some of the shallow stuff too. In passing you quickly, you know, you said like, oh, and this guy turned me on to the kind of music that I listen to and everything. Now, like, and you are a young at heart guy. What do you listen to?
So I'm a jam band guy. I've been that way. I mean, so look, when we were in school, I was a hip hop guy in high school, like a lot of hip hop, you know, old school, good hip hop. I say that like as a proud middle-aged dude. And then I really got into, I guess, like, you know, the Seattle sound and Pearl Jam and all of that. And then I really started getting into the Grateful Dead, who I first saw at the Garden, Madison Square Garden, in September of 1990. And I saw a ton of shows up to the point where Jerry died. And then obviously there was a hiatus. And then I saw all the post-Jerry, like reincarnations of or reimaginations of the Dead, Dead and Company, Further, Fare Thee Well, a lot of these like I guess they're cover bands like Dark Star Orchestra and J-Rad. And that's kind of what I got into. And so that was really, I guess, the love for that, or the intensity of the love for that, came from this friend of mine that I'm talking about. His name's Lauren Schimmel. Great dude. And so, yeah, I mean, that's my music. So from that, I've gotten into Phish a little bit. It's a little bit too much for my brain sometimes. And this kind of newer jam band called Goose, which a lot of people are into. I've seen them a bunch of times now, and I think they're great. So that's kind of my music scene.
Cool. I'm going to bouncing a little bit now. Okay. So you got Bloody Tooth Guy. Bloody Tooth Guy takes off. You know, you're deep into your surgical practice, you know, there. I'm just going along. There's a whole nother level, though, to like that you've seemingly have transcended into, like, okay, like guys that have practices, you know, guys do well. And, you know, you've like, okay, like we're grown, we've grown, we've built, we've scaled. You know, that's not just, you know, dentistry and surgery, obviously, as you know. That's like true entrepreneurship. Running a business is very different, you know, scaling and growing a business. Drilling and cutting into people's mouths and doing videos on Instagram. You talked early when you opened up, we opened this up about, you know, being entrepreneurial and everything. But I'd love you to talk to me a little bit about like kind of the vision of like of what you've built, like why again that was, you know, important to you. And, you know, and just kind of the differences and challenges of like, okay, not only do I have to be the surgeon, but I'm also trying to build something that transcends the entire profession.
Right. Yeah. So I started Riverside Oral Surgery in 2007 with the mindset that I wanted to build the best oral maxillofacial surgery practice in terms of delivery of care. This is not, I did not have designs on world domination, or it was actually before private equity was ever really interested in oral surgery. There were these things called DSOs, dental service organizations, which is corporate dentistry, but they were not really into specialty dentistry at the time. So I really was trying to build, you know, set up an office in the area that I live and you know, exist in, that would be known to be the highest level care, all based on patient experience. I felt very fortunate that we were able to live in a world where I was able to experience hospitality at its finest levels. And I thought that at that time, so we're talking about, you know, early 2000s, that you had a sophisticated consumer, a sophisticated patient, a sophisticated target audience who lives and works and exists in the city, but that there wasn't really healthcare done to that high level in this area. So I built Riverside Oral Surgery in a town. I'm right now sitting 6 miles from the George Washington Bridge. And it took off. I mean, very, very quickly, it was a pretty successful practice. I took a lot of market share from existing practices in the area. And again, you know, we were younger, we were involved in the community. I knew a lot of people. And so they'd bring their kids and then the wisdom teeth kids, and then they'd come or whatever. Then I had this opportunity, this concept that if I could take a guy and a retiring surgeon on the periphery of my zone of influence, and hire a young person, put in new technology, broader scope of practice, market it, build out a nice office, that I could actually reproduce what I had been doing. And you had to find the right guy, and you had to find, when I say guy, I mean new surgeon, and you had to find the appropriate retiring person with a good reputation, but with maybe some shortcomings. So I did that with my second practice, and then I did it again in a third practice. So I had proof of concept up here, though I didn't know that term. And then I actually was called, unfortunately, there was a surgeon in Livingston, which is a town, as you know, with a similar demographic to where I live and where we grew up. But I had no reputation down there. Guy was sick, older. His practice was idle for a couple of months. And I was able to kind of say, you know what, let's see if I can do it in a market that I don't actually enjoy any reputation in. So I did it. We did it. And so then we had four offices. And as this is happening, there's starting to become interest by private equity in oral surgery. And So you hear about this thing called EBITDA, and nobody knew what EBITDA even meant. No oral surgeon knew what EBITDA meant 5 years ago, not one. They couldn't even pronounce it, EBITDA, EBIT, EBITDA, whatever it is. No, and nobody had any clue. And people didn't even understand the concept of, like, I mean, personally, when I was building the practice, I cared not at all about how much money I made. This is factual. I cared that I had enough money not to really worry about money, but I never really cared about how much money. I put a ton back into the offices to make them gorgeous, all the technology, all that. But when you're thinking about scaling, you start to have a mind shift. You start becoming a little bit more aware of things. So then I bought 3 offices and another 2 offices, whatever it is. I started acquiring offices because, again, I had proof of concept in this place in Livingston. And then we were approached by like every DSO in the country. I always said I would never sell to a general dental DSO. I think oral surgery or specialty dentistry and general dentistry are 2 completely different businesses. To the layperson, you might see them as the same because they serve the same population, but one is direct to consumer and one is very much B2B. And so the differences in the mindset and the type of person and the clinical level of care that we think about were different. And so I did not want to sell to a DSO, a general dental DSO. And then there were these multi-specialty groups that came in. I didn't want to do that. And I spoke to a couple of guys who were like large national brands who offered me, you know, really amazing experience, like a lot, you know, great offers. But I didn't want to be a plug and play. And I said to myself, like, I think of myself as someone who's differentiates himself in many ways. There's a lot of intangible aspects to my practice that would speak to its value, not maybe being able to be seen as a bottom line kind of thing. And so I brought on private equity. I did this in September of 2022. And we're growing Riverside right now. We just partnered with another strong group in New Jersey on 2 Fridays ago. And we have a lot that we're looking at in terms of growth going forward. So I'm really excited about that. I still practice 3.5 days a week because I love that. I am kind of somebody, I don't want this to sound a little bit self-serving, but like I really am a little bit different than most people. I love the surgery. I love it. I'm really, really like passionate about it. I love the business, the BD piece of it. Like I love going and talking to surgeons and kind of explaining what I'm trying to achieve and bring them on and like buy into the whole concept because it's real. And then I love like that stupid bloody tooth guy stuff, which is, you know, sometimes falls by the wayside because I don't have the bandwidth. But at the same time, like, I love it all. I love all the aspects of it.
It's a great point and a fascinating story, which leads me to so many different questions, you know, on there. With you also loving it all, which is pretty unique. And obviously, I think one of the real reasons that you've been successful, you know, personally, professionally, creatively, you know, in all of these areas. And you just mentioned again in passing, like, okay, well, now I practice I do surgery 3 days a week or this. How do you kind of like what is your operating system? I talk about personal operating systems a lot, right? You know, like what is your operating system in terms of like determine like, I'm going to do surgery 3 days a week because it's important to me. You know, I'm going to run the business here. Like, how do you step back and create like, okay, you mentioned the word bandwidth. Like, here's the bandwidth that I have. Here's how I kind of allocate, divide, conquer. Mm-hmm. What's your system?
You know, I think that as you get a little bit older and a little bit more comfortable with who you are and more aware of who you are, you tend to lean into the things that you enjoy more, right? When you're younger, you're hustling, you're trying to figure it out. You don't really know yourself very well. You're not totally formed. Not that, even though I think I'm totally formed right now, I have no doubt that if the last 10, 15, 20 years has shown me anything through the evolution of who I am, that the same amount will do even more, maybe at an accelerated rate or slower or whatever. But I think like, as I've learned what really drives me, what excites me, I've been fortunate enough to be able to kind of carve out the appropriate amount of space. I can tell you personally, and I speak to this, and I say this in not in a way that is trying to like make people feel better about themselves. I really do think a full-time professional woman who's also a full-time professional, a full-time mother, it is by far the most complex thing to handle, right? How do they balance their own internal strife, all of that? I mean, it's a very, very challenging thing. I couldn't imagine. But I think in many ways, I try to balance, I try to figure out, like, you know, where can I devote my time where the other thing isn't, where it's not being sacrificed too much and all of that. And I think for me personally, I fail. My biggest weak spot as it, in terms of like my life, like my life is great by almost anybody's standards. But where I fail is like my focus on physical fitness or nutrition, or, you know, that's where I let stuff go. Whereas like my dedication and commitment to my business and to my family and to all of the aspects of what I do is steadfast. My dedication to myself is not so much so, because like Tuesday night, I'm going out to dinner with, you know, six doctors who may join the practice. You know, even though I could simply say dry January or I don't drink or whatever it is, I don't. As part of the business culture, I'm going to have a vodka or three or, you know, whatever it is. And that's not good. It's not healthy. But, you know, again, that's where for me, it's very, very difficult to keep everything at the highest level. So,
well, I mean, I think that, again, that type of pressure and again, doing, you know, everything, if you will, at the highest level is not sustainable and certainly not longevity based. That being said, when you're talking about, you know, health person there too, not uncommon what you're talking about is guys that kind of put themselves in our own, a bunch of our own stuff kind of second, you know, or third.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But we are getting to this spot. You know, you talked about things that you enjoy. Now there's self-awareness to even what you're talking about. You've reached a level of prosperity. You even talked earlier about like what success looks like. Mm-hmm. Do you see that, you know, like where do you see the shift, or if there's one, you know, for you? You've even talked about contentment and complacency. You show no signs of slowing down in the things that you love and clearly light up and are energized when you talk about them. Is there a space, like, is there a space, or do you think about carving out more space of, here I am at, what are you, about 50? Cause like I just turned 50.
Yeah. 49. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So you're right there. Like, okay, what does maybe health, fitness, you know, whatever, even that stuff maybe look like for me, the balance of the work? Your daughters are 18 and 15. So yours are like mine are 19 and 16. Okay. Right. Like we want to be here a while, you know,
yeah, no doubt.
Overall, like yeah. What are the next, you know, milestones look like? 50 is a big one, but you know, I'm thinking to 55, like what does right. 5 years look like?
Right. Yeah. I mean, for me, I do. I've always, my whole life, gone in and out of prioritizing my health. My health looks different than your health, though. You know, we've spoken about this. When you said it to me, whenever I saw you last, you said something about genetics, and it stuck with me because, you know, I'm not blaming my genetics on my, let's say, lack of physical fitness. But you could look at a 17-year-old kid who's ripped and another 17-year-old kid who's like, not like eating like a slob necessarily, but not really well-developed mm-hmm. physically. I was never very like muscular or athletic or whatever it was. I was great in many other ways, but that was not my thing. My physical fitness to me would look like being probably 20 pounds or so lighter, cardiovascularly working out on a regular basis, doing some lifting and stuff, but never really looking like, you know, I would love to. It's something that I would love, but I would never, my goal is not to be like ripped and look amazing. It's just to be more healthy, to feel good and about how I look on a day-to-day and all of that. You know?
I think this is such an important area, you know, because I always talk about also, there's so much white space in a way between, and you're not unhealthy. I'm not saying that at all, but between like, you know, I hear from a lot of guys, there's so much white space between, let's say, unhealthy or not living a quote unquote healthy lifestyle, mm-hmm, right, or as healthy as it could be. And I'd say, look, guilty myself too. And a lot of us, you know, guys that are out, you know, they're playing golf and they're drinking on the courses. There are social aspects of work, you know, that exists. But it's also, it's not a whole lot of fun to try to like eat fucking perfectly every day and work. Like it's no matter what your definition of fun is, like, it's not that, but the white space between, let's say, a certain lifestyle and, oh, I should be like ripped or jacked or like win some event and everything else. And I always say like, look, and even the aesthetics, like dial it into kind of, again, whatever works for you,
right?
Whatever, again, success looks like for you. Okay. If I'm running 20 different locations, a multi-gazillion dollar, you know, operation, performing certain, like all these things, being a good husband, being a good father. Well, guess what? Maybe like, you know, being jacked, like it's not my thing. Like it's not part of the goal thing, but again, right, being healthy, you know, in there, do I go for a walk? Do I exercise? Do I whatever? And to your point on the 17-year-olds or even the 49 and 50-year-olds, you can put a bunch of guys in the same, you know, do the exact same program. Same diet, same nutrition, same workouts, and we're all going to look different.
Right.
Absolutely, we're all going to absolutely look different. Mm-hmm. So it's not even the outside, you know, as much as it really is the inside, as much as it is maybe the feel or the energy.
Right.
But I see it to run a business and operation like you do, and also to show up well, like at the end of the day. So like I still have energy to play with my kids, mm-hmm, or hang out like and do those kinds of things. To that effect, how do you reward yourself? You know, what do you do like for fun? Like, you know, I sign a new client, I always buy myself something, you know, like it doesn't have to be big, but like I like these like little rewards. What do you do for yourself? Or what have you done that's been like, hey, like kind of, you know, successful. I can do this now. I want to do this, or like whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, I do that to some degree too. Although I'm careful with that because I don't want part of my makeup and part of, I think, what has led me to be relatively successful is that I don't get too hung up on being proud of accomplishments. It, for me, I feel like, okay, what's next? It's actually a little bit of a problem because anyone who's around me, who loves me, who cares for me is like, dude, step back, enjoy what's going on and whatever it is. And I have kind of a problem with that because I've always felt that like, if I'm proud of it, you know, Kobe had that famous thing, is like that interview. He did a post-game interview once about like, you know, what are we celebrating? What is there to celebrate? We're not done yet, right? There's a lot, there are a couple more games that had to be played. And frankly, that's kind of the way I see, like, I'm not done. I got a lot of shit to do. I'm very fortunate that I have melded my worlds together so much that my social life and my professional life are all one and the same. People talk about a work-life balance. I have this, I don't want to get too like fluffy with it, but I think that there's more of like a harmony to it. For me, my work-life balance is weighed very, very much toward my professional existence. But at the same time, so like if I'm out Tuesday with business partners trying to earn their business, if they're general dentists, having them refer me patients, if they're surgeons, having them join my business, or just networking with vendors or whatever it is. But then on Thursday night, maybe I'm in Williamsburg going to Brooklyn Bowl to see J-Red, as I said, and I'm enjoying. And so for me, I'm always out. I'm very involved in being like enjoying my existence. People say I burn the candle at both ends, and I do. And like, if you know me, you'd probably be a little concerned. But the fact is that I enjoy that. So I never really reward myself for a win necessarily, although I do want a very specific watch for just having closed this deal. But I do think that I just kind of am very, very fortunate that I enjoy my life really to the nth degree. I mean, again, so for me, it's like, you know, I dine at the best restaurants. It's all bullshit, but like, that's where I go. I go watch my Giants win, I mean, big playoff win. Yankees, where the official oral surgeons of the Devils. So even though I'm a Ranger fan, I'm always at Devils games. Again, music, just existing. Life is I live my life, you know, to the fullest, if you will.
This episode of the Midlife Now podcast is brought to you by Bubs Naturals. Bubs' commitment to excellence begins long before the products land on your doorstep. You guys know how seriously I take my coffee. It's a big deal to me. Bubs Naturals makes the best coffee out there. I go with the dark roast. I absolutely love it. Equally as important, they make the best collagen protein, grass-fed, pasture-raised from Brazil. I put a scoop of it in with their dark roast coffee every morning, and it is absolutely delicious. Their MCT oil powder, I put a scoop of that in there. It's derived from 100% sustainably sourced coconuts, which is also great for me. While I am not plant-based or vegan, I eat a considerable amount of meat. It's great for me to complement that with a product that is not layering on more and things that I don't need more of. So using the MCT oil, their powder that's plant-based and vegan really helps me out. All of their product offerings are free of gluten, soy, nuts, and corn. The whole lineup, keto approved, paleo approved, Whole30 approved, they're NSF certified, nut-free, soy-free, dairy-free, GMO-free, corn-free. Bubs Natural delivers. You can go to their website. You can customize your own trio. You can get the Bubs Brew, the Halo Creamer, which is also fantastic, the collagen protein, the MCT oil. It's awesome. All of it. I love the people behind it. I love the mission of the company. They give back to charity. Woven into the DNA of Bubs Naturals is that of professional athletes, top performers, rabble-rousers, Navy SEALs, and the goal is to exceed your expectations in everything that they do. It's backed by scientific research and discovery and an endless pursuit to find the fountain of youth. It's Midlife Male approved. It's a Midlife Male mission. We are not anti-aging. We are pro-aging positively, gracefully, aggressively. So I say yes to Bubs Natural. I say yes to quality. I say yes to going over to bubsnaturals.com, using promo code MidlifeNow, saving yourself 15%. Check it out. Do you worry about burnout?
Yes, I do. I do. I worry about burnout. But I think that where I live in terms of like at the level that the financial level, that's bullshit, at the like the intensity with which I live, most people don't think it's sustainable, but it's been my existence forever. So, you know, I mean, maybe I'm one of those guys, I mean, I don't want to get morbid, but maybe I'm one of those guys who like, you know, he lived hard, he's done, you know, like this kind of thing. I don't want that. I don't want that at all. But that is, you know, that's a realistic thing. It's not like I'm going and doing crazy stuff. It's not like I'm, you know, really doing a lot of stuff. I am just enjoying my existence. So
but it's constant. Like what you're describing though. It is by design, and it is how you've been doing everything for a while. And it's obviously it's working for you, you know. Right. But what you would describe when you describe, and I think it's different for everyone. When you describe kind of what your days, you know, look like, okay, like they're exhausting. Like they sound exhausting. They do. Like it sounds like a lot. Like okay, that takes a lot of energy. Okay, mm-hmm. Run these businesses, grow these businesses, close these deals. Okay, get into people's mouths, perform surgery, finish up. Okay, go have dinner. Guy, have a couple of drinks, maybe close a few more deals that are there, get some other referrals. Let's catch a football game. Let's catch a hockey game. Let's catch a music thing. And I go, whew, Okay. Like people are wired and built for different things.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
For other sure. people even see like my schedule and they're like, ah, he's up and he's living and he's doing this. And like there's right. different degrees of, again, what we're wired for. And I always say this, like, you're a trained professional at what you do. Okay. You have a body of work and a history of doing it and operating that way, that if I tried to keep up with you, there's no chance. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are other people that would be like, hey, like, they don't want to come train with me. They don't want to sit in the freezing cold water. They don't know what to do with 2 hours of free space, you know, in the middle of the day to like just sit there and like it weird. It's not their thing, you know, right. either. I just, so I like to paint to put all this stuff out there and paint these pictures that it's like, again, like, hey, whatever way you're wired, you know, whatever brings you joy, whatever degree of satisfaction, like, it's all great. If it's working for you, and if it's not working for you, then we may have to talk about making some changes or some pivots or so on and so
forth. Sure. I will tell you though, the existence, I don't want to cut you off, but the existence that you live, maybe not all of it, but the like early morning attention to yourself, taking care of yourself and your nutrition and that is unbelievably, that is to me unbelievably enviable. I mean, if I were somebody who could actually like get to bed at a normal time and wake up in the morning and get my ass to the gym or even on the Peloton, which is 6 feet from my bed or, you know, whatever it is, that is something that would be, that is something to me that I'm desirous of. Like, I would love to be able to do that, but then I would lose out on this other side, like a lot of the business that goes on in the evenings. So it is that like, push and pull. And
I think it's all connected. Everything comes with at a cost in a way, action, right. reaction, good or bad. Right. And I think, again, it's all about whatever this pie chart really, really looks like. And it is an interesting dynamic. And one of the reasons I'm also so grateful to have these conversations is I'm also seeing guys, and you see them, you talked about the younger guys and you talked about, you know, buying practices even from older guys that are retiring or going out there. And I'm seeing this now. We got younger guys, and I'm defining them now, the ones I'm hearing from, you know, 30s, you know, mid-30s, even late 30s, that are seeing 40. And they're thinking, ooh, okay, you know, am I scared of that? Am I excited for that? Should I be making too many changes? Am I burning the candle at both ends? What's sustainable? What does success look like? All of these things. And then you've got the other side guys that are maybe coming out of it the other side. They've weathered the proverbial midlife crisis, you know, they're 50, they're 55 and yep, they've checked the box, you know, of finance. They have burned the candle out there. You know, the things that energize them or used to energize them, maybe they don't have the same degree of energy. What fills their tank is now starting to drain it, you know, a little bit. And they're thinking, what do we do, you know, next? Or what other changes might I need to make, you know, and readjust that allocation, you know, that's in there. And I don't think it's that you can't do anything you want to do, clearly, you know? I mean, it's just, what do we choose to do? What do we want to do? Stuff that comes easy to some is very difficult to others.
Sure.
Like a lot of stuff you described for me, I tell guys like, hey guys, like that's not so fucking hard for me. Like really.
Right.
Like this stuff comes kind of natural to me. The way you talk about like, I love doing the surgeries and I love the, like, not that hard for me to like, physically challenge myself. Like I enjoy that.
Right.
What was hard for me was going to the same office every day for 15 years. You talk about conformity and complacency, doing the same thing, going up to that 25th floor every day, talking like that was hard for me. Lifting heavy shit, not so hard for me.
Right.
You know, like everybody's got the thing. Do you turn it off? Can you turn it off? When do you turn it off? When they're on vacation or at home or whatever it is, like, what does off look like if there's an off?
I turn it off. I do try to turn it off on the weekends and in the early nights of the, like a Monday night home with the kid. Well, my daughter's in college. My older daughter's in college. So my little one is home. And if I've been more aware of anything in the last, since my daughter left for college, is like, how finite the amount of time that we have with them is, you know, meaning in the home. And I think that for me, being able to go home especially on Monday nights. And again, I, that sounds crazy, but that's a big thing for me. And Sunday is to spend time with my little one and really just kind of like be in the house, whether she's upstairs on her phone, TikToking with her friends or whatever it is, but just the fact that I'm there and she'll come down into the kitchen and, you know, I'm just there with her and we can share moments. That to me is turning it off. I can tell you at the end of January, early February, I'm going. My wife grew up with this. She worked for this guy who was at the time president of CNN, who used to every year go to this almost like a retreat by himself, 1 week a year, and just kind of unplug. This was a guy.
Zucker, who, by any chance?
No. Of course, his name totally.
Indirect, I was like, I can't possibly indirect. I'm related to Zucker, who used to run CNN, and I was like,
this guy was the executive producer of World News Tonight, and then was hired into Atlanta. And so when we graduated college, Jen, my wife is a year younger than I am, she went down and worked for him in Atlanta. Mm. And I don't know how his name totally escapes my brain. In any case, so he would go to this place every year and just unplug for a week. And I was like, that seems like a pretty cool idea. And then I never did it, but I spoke about doing it for, and you know, 20 years passes in a minute. And so I'm going to do it at the end of January, early February. I'm going to this place out in Arizona. And I'm just going to, you know, like I'll try to eat healthy, not drink, hike, you know, this kind of stuff. And just like more or less my level of unplugging. And so, but I can't go to some place where it's like, I need to be a little bit fancy about it. So I'm going and like, you know, it's got nice stuff. I need good beds. I don't want to go and like go to the rainforest and get bitten up. I'm a little crazy, you know? So I'm doing it my version of hit what he used to do. And that's basically what it is.
And I think that's so spot on. You know, one of my principles that I talk about all the time is this, you know, this ACE concept: aggregate, curate, and eliminate. Mm-hmm. Take, you can aggregate from all these different experiences and things out there. You got to curate it down, you know, to what works for you. Mm-hmm. And then eliminate everything else. And I say this stuff too, which is like, hey, look, I like, again, going, you know, getting trained by the Navy SEALs and getting put through these activations. But at the end of it, I want to go back to the St. Regis, you know, also right, like, right. Like, again, like who I am, like overall, I don't want to be bitten up in the woods or do all this stuff. Like you can beat me, torture me, do all this other stuff, put me through this stuff. But at the end of the day, I want to put a cushy robe on and right. I want to get a massage. I want to have there be a spa there. I don't need to stay in the woods, you know, right. for like 2 weeks. Some experiences are physical. Some of them are mental. Some of them are emotional. Like we're all again. And that's kind of to the point, guys, whatever you want to find, like it's out there, you know, right. for you. We don't have to constantly reinvent the wheel, you know, or do shit that's not really us to be either, you know, tougher or get the full breakthrough or get whatever else it is. You want to go to Sedona, you know, and like there's a lot of ways to hike and get out and do it. And you can spend a lot, you know, you want to get tortured, go get tortured. But if you right. want to come back to the hotel, you can do all that stuff too. So I think that, you know, the authenticity to it, knowing yourself, like is also really what it comes down to. Cause life is also hard enough. Mm-hmm? Yes. Yep, we don't have sure. to make it that much harder. You're a few years away from being an empty nester also.
True.
You know, as you were mentioning again, like I just dropped our oldest off at the airport yesterday. He goes to college in Boulder. It's very emotional. It's the first one out, you know?
Yep.
Now our younger one at 16 is driving, you know, by himself. Like we're in that, you know, countdown, you know, too. So Kate and I talk about it a lot, like, okay, what am I really going to do the next couple of years? You know, because we can't, we're locked in, you know, in a way where we are. Yes, I get more trips to Boulder, but we're not moving, you know, like he's going to graduate high school and go off to college. But in a couple of years, we're empty nesters. And it's really raising a number of questions about what we do with our time. You know, where do we go? Do we stay? Like, what are you thinking about?
So, you know, it's funny growing up on Long Island and then moving and living in New Jersey, which has been amazing to me and my kids and my family. You know, we talk about once the little one is out, you know, moving out of New Jersey, maybe something in the city. And then we think about something by a beach, you know, out east, actually. And so for us, I think that, you know, that is probably the trajectory, but I still have a business here. I still work. I'm going to continue to do so. I'm totally driven to do that for many, many years. So I definitely need presence in New Jersey. But I think more time to travel. I would like to take more time for myself and kind of find a place in my mind and in the world where I can feel like I am like a little more settled. I have often spoken about the fact that ultimately, this is not 3 years from now, ultimately, and this, I don't know if this is a pipe dream or like something I'm going to actually come, that will come to fruition, but I hope it does. I'd love to find some land in Tuscany. I'd love to have a home in Tuscany that I live at mostly full time, where like an old woman with a wheelbarrow and like one tooth has like a piece of cheese and a bread and wants to trade me. And I will like happily do free oral surgery for like the fresh tomato and look out and see the olives. And just like, you know, this is really in my mind's eye, the way that I would like it to all end, if you will. And so that's what I want to do. But I think in the near term, I'll probably maybe downsize in Jersey, have something, you know, on the island and maybe a small apartment in the city. But the goal would be for me to have a place where my kids would want to come back to. Right. So like to have something out there where they would bring their eventually, you know, boyfriends or whatever, and eventually husbands and families and whatever, if that's what they want, to come back and just everyone be in a house together. Again, this is my idea of what would be optimal. You know,
do you write that stuff down? Like, is there like a Auerbach family, like vision board, or do you have like a notebook that's private somewhere where you're like, okay, here, like, no, like, is that story, is the Tuscany story, like, is it written anywhere? Like,
it's not, it's here. I mean, and it's actually, you know, the guy, you know, the guy, Harvey Wexler.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for his 40th birthday, he took us all to Lucca, in Tuscany. And I was like, sold. I was like, this place is where I want to be for the rest of my life. And
did he study abroad in Italy? Or was that,
no,
was
he,
that
he, I think he backpacked with Tito. You remember Tito?
Okay, I do. The reason I asked this, and you're mentioning Florence, is because I studied in Florence, you know, second right. semester junior year. That was my abroad time. So right. the Luke and your dream, I'm like, okay, got it.
I love it. I mean, I love it. To me, that's just simplicity, ease. And again, it's so contrary to the way I live my life. And if you would ask my wife, she'd be like, yeah, you always say you want to sit down on the beach, but the moment you're there, you're like, okay, where are we going? Let's go. You know, literally I'll go to Miami for whatever. And we're on the beach. And then after 10 minutes, I can't really sit still. It's probably obvious to you looking at me. I can't sit still. I get up and I'm like, walk the boardwalk up and down. And I'm just like, you know, do whatever I have to do. I hope to find a place centered wise where I can actually just chill out later.
Mm, it's such a good point, but here's the thing I feel like, and I've learned, cause I'm similar. And Kate says that to me too. She's like, you say like, we're going to have a place in the beach and a place in the mountains and you're going to run, but you don't do nothing, right. You know, and you right. do nothing well. Now right. I do believe I have swapped. I've swapped a lot of the unhealthy habits and behaviors and actions for healthier ones. Doesn't make me any less busy, if you will, or, right. you know, or constantly in motion, but you swap the late nights, you know, like I do Miami very differently than I used to do Miami, right. you know?
Sure.
Like I remember I even did like Vegas way differently than I've done, you know, in the past. Like I, for forever, I didn't know that they had like restaurants and spas, you know, and that there was like actual hiking and stuff that you only knew the debauchery side. Like now, yeah. like there's early mornings and there is breakfast and there is a spa tree and there's all this stuff. You go, okay, so we're just change, like stuff just right. just changes and evolves, you know, over time. So I don't think it's as much as like slowing down or having to slow down or technically do nothing, as much as it is like reframing maybe the things that we do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I don't think walking the boardwalk is any less relaxing or efficient or effective than like, again, sitting still. you know, or whatever it is. I think you can party until 5 o'clock in the morning, or you can get up in the morning and see the sunrise, you know, and right. exercise. It doesn't have to be nothing. I think it's just reframing like what it is that we enjoy doing. And most right. importantly, like you said, like, where do we want to do that? Mm-hmm. The old lady without the tent. That sounds like a nice thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're gonna, I like that. I like
you're
that.
Gonna I'll get give... it. We'll do one of these, you know, I don't know how many years from now, we'll have, and there you will be in Tuscany, you that know, does. for this. This was a blast. I have one more question for you, since sure. now that you brought it up. Your inner circle, you know, like you mentioned Harvey, like, boy, we have some stories there too. I love that guy. Who's in your inner circle?
So I'm very, very fortunate to have a strong group of friends. I have friends from like through my life. You know, some of my closest friends are some of my earliest friends. Harvey, of course, is a very, very tight friend of mine. I just got a text from my buddy Hank, and I could, like Larry and Josh, and like, these are all guys that are, you know, our age-ish from high school. I see some people that you grew up with a lot, actually, which is funny. But I have a group of friends, a couple friends, if you will, that have become family, where we all, as couples and our children, spend a ton of time together, where the kids all have their individual relationships. And it's actually kind of part of the most beautiful part of my life, that Sundays are often spent with very, very close friends and a lot of people. I know that, you know, a lot of people think like my circle is small and that's what makes me like strong and great and whatever. My circle is small in terms of quality, but it happens thankfully to be a little bit robust in that the husbands are best friends with the husbands, the wives with the wives. It's not like just a one-sided thing where a lot of couples have like, they're friends with all the wives' friends. And then, so you're just kind of hanging out with the guys that happen to be there circumstantially, or you're friends with the guys' friends. And then the wives kind of don't like each other, or maybe there's some good relationship. We have a very strong, larger circle, but it is very tight, but it's quite large.
Mm. Harmony, the word you mentioned.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
yep.
It does. It sounds harmonious, and it sounds great like that. Jay, this was a blast, man. Thank you.
Yeah, no doubt, man.
For thank you. A ton of reasons. So how do people, before we do this on the formal side of things, how do people find you, you know, and follow okay. you out there?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So my business is Riverside Oral Surgery. You know, we have multiple locations throughout New Jersey, riversideoralsurgery.com, or you could email me JMA@riversideoralsurgery. On Instagram, I am Bloody Tooth Guy. You could find me at bloodytoothguy.com or bloodytoothguy@gmail.com. Or if you happen to be in Bergen County or New York City or at any Fish, J-Rad, or other type of show like that, Goose, come say hello.
Awesome. 183,000 followers on Instagram for Bloody Tooth Guy. Like, it's the real deal, my man. This is super cool. Thank you so much for being here. I truly, truly appreciate it. Guys, if you like what you have heard on the Midlife Now podcast today, and I can't imagine why you wouldn't, this was a blast. This is a lot of fun, you know, on the whole thing. Please give us a positive review. Give us that 5-star rating. Keep the Midlife Male community growing. We're going to catch up to 183,000 Bloody Tooth Guy followers by helping men maximize middle age. You can always reach out to me at Greg Scheinman, greg@midlifemail.com. And I'm back here every week. I'm not hard to find. Thank you so much, guys. We're out of here.
Thank you.
If you're interested in coaching and taking this conversation deeper so that you can achieve your personal and professional goals, be sure to head over to midlifemail.com and check out the Work With Me page to explore options.